Well, hello to you, wandering listener, and welcome to the Vagabond Dilemma, with your highly esteemed hosts, the ever-dashing Henry, and one and only me, Rudy. This week, we will climb some of the world's highest peaks, as well as ponder specific paths to enlightenment. I will also try to find the symmetry in the world, whilst Henry will question the definition of ravines. So please, take a seat, relax, and enjoy. Yes. Hello, okay. Everybody.
Hi. All right. Yes. Well, good morning, or I guess good day to whoever hears this. I should not date this too much, time-wise. So, good day.
Hello, Henry. How are you doing?
Hi, Rudy. I'm doing quite fine myself, am I?
This will be the most professional podcast ever.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
I'm doing fine. Made myself a cup of tea. You know, chilling.
What cup of tea, actually?
That's a good question. If only I knew. Boss fruit, if that tells anything.
Boss fruit?
That's what it's called.
Oh, like Dutch?
Or maybe it's Dutch. I don't know. No, it seems English.
Boss means forest in Dutch. So, forest fruits.
Yeah. Well, anyway, should we introduce the podcast?
Huh? I think, yeah, this is a boss fruit-based podcast, and we're going to talk all about
That's
tea.
That's right.
Today.
If you ever was interested in tea, especially boss fruit tea, you're at the right place, ladies and gentlemen.
This is the right podcast for me. So, please tune out right now. Thank you very much. Okay. The real podcast, as named by Rudy, is the Vagabond Dilemma. Do you want to explain your thought process, King?
Yeah, so what this podcast is going to be is basically us two very, you know, highly esteemed professionals in research of missing explorers. We are going to try and find intricacies, details, lost stories, and come up with actual endings of where those missing explorers went. And the Vagabond Dilemma is just, well, shall I explain the word vagabond?
Sure.
Right. So vagabond basically means a wanderer or somebody who feels more at home when they're technically not at home. I am going in a roundabout about this. It's basically a dude who literally wanders around. And dilemma is because, well, most of the stories, as we are yet to find out, might not have an ending. So the dilemma is of us trying to actually find the right ending for the specific person.
Yeah. And I think also, in another way, I think the word vagabond itself is not a dilemma, but... Oh, now I can't think of the word. Like, the double meaning, I guess? Because it's someone who feels at home most wandering.
Yeah.
Which kind of contradicts the a concept of home, I would say.
Yes, yes.
So, Rudy thought a lot about this. I'm just a fucking dumbass that's here along for the ride.
well, don't sell yourself short. Oh yeah, we should introduce how are we going to host this? Because obviously
we're
going to
be two hosts. Maybe we should introduce ourselves as well. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, wait, we didn't do that yet? Okay, yeah, we should do that.
All right, you want to start?
I'm going to introduce my other host first. The O-grade Henry, the one who has the stories of millennia, the wanderer himself, a traveler just like myself. And he's going to help me, Rudy, on this incredible journey of what we already talked about. I could not have sold it better, let's be honest.
The incredible Rudy, if I do say so. If I might say so. And that's just because you way oversold me, so I have to do something.
But right, let's explain how the hosting works.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is we pick, per episode, we pick an explorer and we discuss this person. So we talk about who they are, from what era are they, and maybe some details of that era. We discuss their mission. So what they set out to do, and what happened right before they got lost, essentially.
Yeah.
right? Did I miss anything?
No, I mean, I think it's good to mention that we're gonna keep switching. So, for example, this episode, Henry will introduce the Explorer, and then we do what we will call the bullshit segment, where we try to come up with a solution to the unexplained mystery. But and then the next episode, I switch, basically, and I do the introduction of the Explorer.
Yeah. So today it is my turn. Do you want to get right into it?
Let's go. I'm all for okay. it. I have my tea. I am on my toes.
All right. Well, first off, I apologize to any Korean speakers for this absolute butchering I'm about to do. Today I prepared for Park Young's. Let me retake. No. Park Young-so. So that's what I gathered from my intricate research on how to pronounce it. I'm gonna try to stay consistent, but it's kind of it's a difficult name. So we try. Rudy, you try.
Yeah, yeah. But wait, I have to try. You butchered already. I think he's dead. I think you did a good job.
Alright. Are you just not gonna ever say his name?
Okay, what was it again?
Wait. I'll copy paste it so you also know the name, at least. Right. Over here. So, pronounced Park Young-so, something like that.
Oh, okay, let me try. Where did you paste it?
I pasted it in the initial document. Oh, yeah.
Park Young-so.
God damn, that was so much better. Park Young-so. Okay. Right?
Yes. Probably not right, but right. Let's go.
Right. All right. So, as I said earlier, Park Young-so is... I'm not going to be able to not laugh when I say this name just because I'm so bad at it. So, he's a South Korean.
Oh, okay.
And more specifically, a South Korean mountaineer. Born in 1963, so this is a very recent.
Yeah, I was gonna say our first explorer is quite a recent boyo.
Yeah, I picked him based on the mission description, but it turns out the mission description. Well, I guess I'll get into it later, but it was just finding a mountain, a different path up a mountain, so. Not quite what I thought, but so since he was born in 1963, I consider this a modern era, is what I called it. Mm-hmm. So he climbed Mount Everest in 1993, and the mission that I will talk about later happened in 2011. So
it's quite
in that
recent.
Regard, yeah, it is. It is. It's only 11 years ago. That
Gosh.
This happened. Like, communication technology was quite modern. Climate technology, I assume, was also quite modern. And since he is one of the most prominent mountaineers of South Korea, I also assume he had access to all that cutting-edge technology. So in that regard, like, era-wise, it's very much where we are now, basically. Mm-hmm. Maybe a couple of iPhones ago, huh?
I was going to say, it's 1 year before the world end. Remember when people thought that, in, what was it, 12th of December 2012, the year, like, the world is going to end?
Yeah. Did you, okay, wait, did you believe in that? Thoughts? What were you thinking?
I think because I was quite young back then, like 12 years old, right? I actually think that I believed in some sort of, like, not an actual, you know, meteorite fall, but I did believe in a sense of, like, something big is going to happen.
Hmm, interesting.
Because back then I was really, like, big on conspiracy theories, but something that, not conspiracy theories, or, like, where did Hitler go, but, like, the Mayan calendar, what did the Aztecs do, and stuff like that, right? Actually, a little tangent. I went to a museum in New York City, what was it, the Met, I think, and they had the Mayan calendar's replication, basically, on a wall, right?
Oh, that's so cool.
And they had a small description plate. And they literally wrote in description plate. And I'm like, how did people not know this? This must have been known before, right? That they wrote the Demayan, what we know as calendar, is actually not a calendar as we know it. In a sense of, like, it's not an actual calendar. It doesn't even, like... So it's a calendar for, I think, if I remember correctly, I might be wrong on this, but only for festivals. And, like, you know, it's a celebratory calendar. Basically, it doesn't actually encompass the whole year, and they didn't use it for, like, planning or knowing which day it was.
Okay, that's kind of weird.
So that means that that whoever was like, yo, the Mayan calendar ended in, like, you know, this day, this year, the world is going to end. There was just, no, the party ended back then. Literally crying in the club.
That's pretty funny. Okay, back to our good friend Park Young-so.
Yeah.
He was, so a bit more about his achievements. He was the fifth person to complete a full Explorer's Grand Slam.
What is that?
And the full Explorer's Grand Slam consists of visiting the North and South Pole. So from, like, you get put on the edge somewhere in Antarctica and you walk to, like, the geographical South Pole. And visiting the seven highest peaks. This is called the Seven Peaks, which are the highest mountains on every continent. So the full Explorer's Grand Slam is visiting the North and South Pole and the Seven Peaks.
Wow.
And the Seven Peaks are the Mount Everest, so everybody knows that one, in the Himalayas, in Nepal. Aconcagua in the Andes in Argentina. Mount Denali in the Alaska Range, USA. Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania, which, interestingly, I kind of went down a mild rabbit hole, is the largest freestanding mountain in the world, so not part of a mountain range.
Oh, I did know that it's largest of something. I didn't know it was this.
It's that has to be really impressive to stand in front of then, you know?
Because it's actually, you know, just because it is a thing where you, whenever I see pictures of, like, the Himalayas, I'm like, yeah, the mountains are high, but it's all a mountain range. So, like, the, you know, the perspective is a bit different.
Yeah, yeah.
If
exactly.
It's a one standing mountain, it's like from The Hobbit, the Lonely Mountain.
And then you have the Vincent Massive in Antarctica. And then Oceania is kind of funny because one is Puncak Jaya. Or Jaya, I don't know how to pronounce it, in Indonesia. And the other one is Kosciuszko, I'm just going to call it, in Australia. But the latter is only 2,000 meters high. So they both count towards this Explorer's Grand Slam, but I assume the Indonesian one was picked because the Australian one is too easy, probably.
Oh, really?
I mean, 2,000 meters... Hell, I've climbed mountains of 2,000 meters.
That is also
maybe I should
true.
Go climb Mount Everest.
Let's go right now.
Yeah, but also, and then the last one.
Sorry,
go ahead.
No. That was the last one. I figured you already told them.
Yeah, one more mountain. Because this was very interesting to me. So I wanted to ask you, if you maybe know. What is the tallest mountain in Europe?
The tallest mountain in Europe?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to guess the country first, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's gonna be somewhere in Austria?
Wrong.
Jesus, okay. Already off to a good start. Italy?
No.
What?
I'll give you one more guess. See, this is what I thought as well.
Okay. Europe. Do we count Scandinavia as Europe?
Yes.
Norway.
No.
Fuck.
So, the answer is Russia.
Ha!
And... this is where it might be kind of ambiguous, because it depends on if you consider Russia as Europe.
Yeah, that's where my heart came from.
It's in the European
it's
part
Eurasia.
Of Russia. Yes, but it is on the, like, considered European side. So in that aspect, I would count it. And the mountain is Mount Elbrus, and it's in the Caucasus. So, I actually didn't know they have quite big mountains there. It's 5,600 meters tall.
Holy shit.
The one that I thought was the largest previously was Mont Blanc, but that's only the seventh tallest if you consider Caucasus Mountains.
Wow.
At 4,800. So that was just something I found interesting myself because I had no clue. Furthermore, Park Yongsa also completed what I have only seen quoted as the true Explorer's Grand Slam, as the very first person to do all the previous mentioned stuff, but also climb all the peaks above 8,000 meters.
All the peaks, and how many are there?
14, apparently.
This dude had a hobby and he loved it.
Yeah, he was he was just a crazy good mountaineer, I guess.
Literally. But also, a quick question. You said one of those seven peaks was in Antarctica, right?
Yes.
Imagine climbing. I guess if you're climbing a mountain that's really high, at some point you don't care where you are, because the climate will always be the same anyways, right? It's basically Antarctica up there anyways.
Yeah. I guess that's kind of fair to say. I mean, this dude also went to, the South Pole. You know, did that.
Yeah, just did that, you know, evening stroll, why not?
The mountain in Antarctica is 4,900 meters tall.
Easy money.
So, I mean, I guess, like you said, for all these mountains, except for the one in Australia and the one in Indonesia, I guess, you need, a lot of cold preparation, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, I guess, yeah, maybe it just doesn't matter because you're prepped for it anyway. But maybe it does. I don't know. I didn't look very far into it. Moving on. How long do you think it took him to do the true Explorer's Grand Slam?
True Explorer's Grand Slam. That's...
And in asking that, this is keeping in mind that there was a bit of a gap between... some of his climbs, because
well, obviously,
maybe he did. This wasn't like an initial goal of his.
Yeah.
So,
I can tell you,
he started his first mountain. He finished was Mount Everest in 1993.
Wait, that was his first mountain.
The first of the Challenger, I assume.
This dude was like, "Yo, let's pick the crown jewel right at the very beginning." Okay, but...
So what do you think? How long did it take?
Let's say... Well, if he was such a great adventurer, and if he really loved his hobby that much, then I would say... 10 years?
Okay. That's a good, really good guess. So he finished all the mountains in the challenge in 9 years.
Uh-huh.
By 2002, he did all the mountains. But the full challenge, he finished in 12 years. So in 2005, he finished the North Pole.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the
end
of the
challenge.
That's
still pretty quick, isn't it? Because he did more than one thing per year.
Yeah. Definitely. It's really quick. All right, well. I guess nowadays, I also read that people are doing this challenge in record times. Like, I read that somebody did the Seven Peaks in 140 days, something like that. But I think, he was the first person to do this, so...
Here I am, trying to go to a gym.
It's okay, King. You can be the first person to ascend over 1,000 steps for every consecutive day on the, what's it called, the stair machine, where you walk upstairs.
Oh my god.
Okay, and then, alright, so to sum up his, description... He was a very seasoned mountaineer who had done a lot of successful exhibitions. Expeditions is what I meant to say.
Yeah, it's all right.
In years leading up to his disappearance, he was still doing expeditions like finding alternative climbing routes. And
also, he was a pioneer too at his hobby. He was pioneering new paths for other people, I guess.
Yeah, so this is kind of what I'm not clear about, because I don't know if this is if that was actually it, or if a lot of these paths were already traveled, and then after he's trying to find new paths, for fun, basically. Mm-hmm. Or as a challenge.
Oh, this shit's too easy! Let's go and beat the old dusty trail!
But, for example, his team was the last one to find a new viable alternative route on Everest in 2009. among 20 total viable routes, approximately.
And did he succeed?
So, yes.
Oh, wow.
But that was, like, the last, like, route that was theorized and actually done by them, called the Korean route.
Okay.
They were very inspired in naming it, clearly.
Yes.
Okay. So that's... Let me read his name one more time. Park Young-seok. Park Young-seok. I don't know. I'm sorry, Korea.
Korea will find you.
But yeah, I found it very interesting to go down a little mountaineering rabbit hole.
Yeah.
It was... I don't know, mountains are kind of cool.
Yes, they are. They are. Big rocks, aren't they?
Big rocks indeed. Moving on to the mission. The mission was to climb the Nepali mountain Annapurna 1, which is the 10th tallest mountain in the world. Annapurna 1 was the first mountain in the world above 8,000 meters to be scaled to the peak. In the 1950s, I think it said. But, interestingly, like, people had already gotten higher on Everest. They just didn't reach the peak yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, people were already at 8,500 meters, but Annapurna 1 was the first one to reach the peak. So, the mission was they were looking to find an alternative route to the summit on the southern flank of Annapurna 1. However, this was considered, and clearly, based on the end result, a very dangerous mission. They had tried it before in 2010. So this final exhibition, expedition, happened in 2011. So they tried it before in 2010, but they had to abort the mission at 6,100 meters. Due to bad weather and somebody got hit by a rock.
Holy shit.
So breaking their leg, I think it was. So, you know, quite dangerous.
Yeah.
And then in 2011, they returned to try again this mission. Also, other people had tried, like, on this south wall. I don't know if it was the same route, but other people had tried before. And it ended quite miserably. Two French people tried, one died, and I think he was also a very big mountaineering guy. And the other guy made it down, but with a broken arm the whole way.
Jesus Christ.
Another person got hit by a rock, had a concussion, fell 300 meters, woke up, and then just kind of in a confused daze, I guess, just tried to descend until he was found by rescuers. That guy, again, tried again with the team, but they had to stop again due to bad weather. So, truly, it was quite a challenge.
yeah, I can tell that from the facts presented to me.
Yeah. So, like I said, in 2011, they tried again with two team members from the 2010 expedition, which came back to try again. On October 18th, I think it was. I forgot to write down the date. Sorry, in October at least of 2011, they reported. So they were up on the mountain. They reported that they were going to come back down due to bad weather and heavy rockfall. And unfortunately, after that point, they were never seen again.
That's it. That's the whole story. They're never seen again after that one report.
Yep, there was searches. The Korean, like, government, I guess, sent people to search for them. But after 10 days, the search was called off and they were never found.
Wow. Okay. So that is it.
It is quite an abrupt ending, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So... And now we get to the part where we think of something, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, let me. Okay. So you said the mountain is what was it? 8,000 meters.
8,000 between 8,000 and 8,100, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is quite tall.
Well, if he fell, he should have been there by now, right? Even if it's a tall mountain. Fell?
Sorry, what did you ask? If he fell, he's dead?
As in, like, he reached the end by at some point, if he fell, because, I mean, the mountain's tall, but he wouldn't be falling for 10 years, so we can rule that out.
Right. I mean, yeah, if you fall, like, it's still, like, this is going to sound stupid, but it's still a triangle shape, right? So.
Oh, right, you kind of roll down the,
You roll down the entire way, you can also get stuck somewhere, is what I'm trying to say.
But nobody actually knows if they fell, right? Because it was him and some other people?
Yes, they were three people in total.
Right, so there's actually no evidence that they fell.
There is no evidence, they didn't find, well, they did find something, but I wasn't going to leave it for the resolution.
Okay. Oh, right. Okay.
I won't spoil that right now, because it might...
Oh,
you know.
Tease. But okay, so they could have found, like, the secret lair of Dalai Lama, because that's Nepal, right?
That is Nepal, yeah.
Yeah, like, what did they just find? The original scripts of Buddha, and they're like, yo, this dude lives somewhere here in a valley for 1,000 years, right?
Right.
And he's just chilling, he's just having a good life. And I've climbed all the mountains there is, basically. I've reached everything I wanted to. I can just, you know, chill out.
Okay, so what you're saying is they were climbing the mountain. They found this, I guess, set of scrolls, set of ancient scrolls. And they just sat down there and, like, reached enlightenment, kind of?
That would be one theory, yes.
So they really just, instead of, like, I guess, but that does imply they wanted to keep it for themselves, that kind of, right?
Well, maybe they... Oh, okay. Change of theory. They didn't find the scrolls. Scrolls found them. In a sense of, like...
I like that.
Monks saw them climb, and they're like, yo, you have reached our secret entrance that nobody shall know about, but as you already are here, and you seem like a good lad, we will let you in, but you can't, like, go out anymore. In a sense of, like, come here, or we eat you.
Yeah, because that's the only way these guys get food up on the fucking mouth. But I mean, the come here, or what did you say? You can never return if you see this?
Yeah.
I think that's always a good avenue, I guess, to go in these kinds of stories.
But what's your theory? Oh, wait, you know the ending?
Wait, first I want to say, I think it's kind of funny. Like, let's say they did. Like, okay, let's say these monks find them, right?
Yeah.
Then instead of saying something like normal to the base station, they're like, oh, God, there's bad weather and rocks falling. This really sucks, guys. And then they just go into this fucking cave and get enlightened or whatever the fuck, or potentially eaten, I guess. And then... It's just saying something normal. These guys, these schmucks on the surface, just have to search for them for like weeks, only to come up with zero resolution.
Well, there's the price for enlightenment, you know? It's always the ones who are enlightened basically make everyone around them fools, right? Indirectly. So, in this case, directly.
They were already enlightened and they were like, let's make fun of these idiots on the surface. Well, my theory, I don't know. See, the thing is, knowing the resolution to the story, it's kind of hard to come up with something. But also on a mountain, there really isn't much, you know?
Well.
Rocks falling. I think entering a type of cave is the most, like, logical way, let's say.
But honestly, like, because you always seen it in the movies, but how many mountains do actually have caves that you can enter? Like, that's probably not as common as we think it is.
That's a good point. Well, okay, let's not say just caves, but like, now it's going to get funky because I don't know the proper term. But like,
oh, we're going to get rowdy.
A ravine?
Ravine, okay.
Like, I think those are quite common, right?
Yes, those are.
And now the real question is, are ravines, like, also in the middle of mountains or nah? Like, is that
Cause
possible?
Because I think, okay, I think that this distinction between a ravine and a cave is, wait, because if ravine, if we're talking about a horizontal ravine, right, on the ground, then that's just a gap between land. Could have been water, could have been split earth, something like that. If we're talking about, if it is ravine, a vertical one, then I would only assume it could happen from like a split rock. Because I think cave implies that it's either man-made or that there's like, I don't know, some water activity that like made it so.
Really?
I think, I'm not a geologist, alright?
Oh, what did you say? Rocks colliding? Is that one of the things you said?
Yeah, ravine. Like, you know, like a rock splitting and then it just, you know, there's a gap and then it becomes the ravine.
Alright, here's the big brain take. The fucking rocks were falling. Boom. Ravine. They were like, holy shit, what's that? What's that gap over there? Let's have a look inside. And then they descended. Right. Now they're in the ravine. And what do they find? I don't know. A massive greenhouse with food and water.
What?
That was built there for some reason.
Bears don't live up in the mountain, right? That high up, nobody lives.
Yeah, I don't think so. Except for apparently some Nepali monks nowadays.
I mean, you wouldn't be surprised. They do have their monasteries up the mountains, right? Pretty high up, too.
I don't know how high, yeah, but I'm looking forward to the Nepali cannibalist monk article coming soon, hopefully.
Because we debunked the mystery. I mean, it also could have been the case of, like, a stray vulture being like, yo.
Oh, they got picked up?
Yeah. Because, you know, okay, listen up. Because of the pressure under the sea, right? Under the sea. like, fish grow really big. For example, the giant squid, right? It's because of the pressure and it's because it's so dark. And, like, what if the world is actually full of symmetry? And very, very high up, things also grow humongous. Because of the lucent pressure. And like, and then they saw. Have you heard of The Rock? Not the Dwayne Johnson. It's like an urban legend. Not an urban legend. It's a folklore legend. I think actually originated from Africa. So the legend is just it's a big eagle-like bird that could eat elephants because of how big it was.
No, I haven't heard. And that bird, they call the bird a rock. Is that what the story
I think
is?
It's spelled R-O-K without the C before the K.
Oh, okay.
So what if rock found them? This turned into a cryptid podcast.
You know, the thing with the theory of what if there's like a symmetry and there's massive birds as well, is that there's no way they wouldn't have been seen. That's the issue, right?
Fuck, you're right. Well, okay. They found a ravine.
They just live in this ravine?
Since that day, they just live there. No! Whoa! Yo! They lived there. They fell in the ravine, right? But they broke their equipment or something like that. They don't have any equipment to get out of it, but they are like sustainably living in the ravine.
They don't use plastic straws in there.
Well, what else can you do that? You have to live sustainably, otherwise you would die, right? If you expend the resources.
Yeah. Well, maybe with a little bit of luck, they had their backpacks packed with all kinds of seeds they could grow.
Well, frick.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe there's a nice little
maybe they found an almost extinct species of a bat. Like a humongous bat in a cave. Because a bat would never go out, right? Because why would it? Because it's a bat. So
I don't think that's true, King, but go off.
Well, I would like to think that because the ocean is unexplored for the most of our lifetime still, although the technology exists, then caves are even less explored.
Okay.
Especially so high up, if there was a cave.
I think that's not really. I think the caves that wouldn't be explored would be just ones that are too narrow to explore.
He's Korean, right? Koreans are small, no?
Yeah, but they're a massive backpack to climb a mountain's hard.
Ah, frick. But what kind of animals live in caves?
I also read this fact, actually.
Yeah?
Park Young's... Oh, fuck. Let me just read this name again. Park Young-sok, he in his trek to the South Pole, with a team, he went 44 days self-sufficient, so without food resupplies, meaning he was dragging a massive sleigh along with him the entire time.
I've had people do that.
So it's not like they're just...
Did he find Santa Claus up there?
Maybe that's the true explorer's grand slam, is finding Santa Claus.
That's why they climb the highest peaks, because that's where it's cold and they go to both of the poles. Oh my god! I mean, I'm gonna debunk this theory very quickly. Santa Claus doesn't exist in the poles. He exists as some fat man somewhere in Colorado, USA.
Huh? I just want to say, I think it's weird that they visit both the poles, but they don't visit Poland.
Oh my god. We should petition this to be added to the Grand Slam. Go to Poland, for fuck's sake. They have nice roads now, so it should be fine getting there.
Damn, they really are trying to make their country accessible for explorers.
It was there all along, we just didn't see it.
Well, you got any other ideas?
I don't think I do, but I'm pretty confident that you're going to read me the resolution and it's going to be about monks.
Absolutely. Actually, can I circle back one more time?
Yeah.
Why would the bat in the cave be massive? Wouldn't that be very counterintuitive to a cave?
Because the cave is massive, and the bat was like, well, if I have such a massive home, I could might as well be massive.
Say no more. You're absolutely right. All right. Well, I guess then we get to the conclusion of the story. The resolution is that they were never found.
Aha!
However,
oh,
it is pretty easy to assume what happened to them, which is that they got buried by rockfall and avalanches. One of their alleged equipments, so I read that it wasn't 100% sure that it was theirs, a rope was found buried under 4 meters of snow. So,
how do you find that? Who found the rope and was like, yo, I was digging in this spot for 4 meters and I found this rope?
Good question. And 5 years later, so in 2016, his son, also a mountaineer, Park Sung-min, also went to look for him, but didn't find him, of course. I don't think he ever had a chance. I don't think it was like a crazy serious search either. It was more like, a tribute climb, probably, which is cool. But yeah, so as far as I could see, he was never found, but he's probably, yeah, unfortunately, buried under some rocks on the mountain. It's just the dangers of mountaineering, huh?
Yeah. Well, as this is a pretty still, you know, modern tragedy, our condolences go out to his family and all the relatives that are still alive. And rest assured that the monks are taking care of it.
Truly, he has reached enlightenment, and that's all we could ever hope for.
Yes. And with that, I guess, for this episode...
Actually, can I say one more thing? I think it's cool that he died doing what he loved most.
That actually is cool. I guess for him, especially if he was such a crazy mountain pioneer, right?
Yeah.
I think he himself maybe would have even wished for like this to be the way he goes.
Yeah, cheers to that. Hail. I hope I also get buried by rocks while drawing.
Wait a minute. And with that good note, we will end this episode, and we hope you will listen to it and listen to the next one and the next one after it. And actually, we can't say what days we're going to upload it because we don't know yet. But we're going to make an episode trailer. We're going to say it in that.
Sure. We'll see. You know, if you're listening to this, then it has already come out, so
yes,
make sure
definitely.
You listen to it again.
And share it everywhere. Tell your friends. We will also try to share everywhere, right, Henry, our Twitter moderator?
I don't have active social media.
And yeah, well...
Do you want to plug your Instagram then, King?
Oh, my Instagram? Well...
I don't know.
I don't know. I see why not. 000 RUDYS 000. There you go.
That's my plug as well. For the best username, I know.
I'm gonna be there all day.
That's kind of sad, but alright. Yeah, thank you for listening as well, then.
Right. Au revoir.
Au revoir.